Welcome to Prime Time. We're at the top of the hour, so go ahead and get started. This is your half hour, sometimes 45 minutes, depends on how chaotic things get, section where I answer your questions about Resonate. So if you drop the questions in the office hours questions thread, I've linked to everywhere that people usually post questions that aren't the correct place, so that you can get questions in the right place. Someone is saying that I'm muted. I'm not muted. If you can't hear me, I'm going to be very sad. If someone else can hear me, do make some noise. Let me know that you can hear me. If no one can hear me, then... Okay, one moment here. Hello? 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 Am I there now? Hi, you can hear me. Great. I had so much I was talking about. Oh, I'm so sad no one heard any of that. Like, most of it won't be on the recording either, because it was before I started recording at the top of the hour. Anyway, welcome to Primetime. Questions and answers for Resonate. Get your questions posted in the questions thread. I do see some posted, so we'll go ahead and get started right with those. Great to see so many people here hanging out. I see lots of familiar faces. Let's get going with questions. So Rhino Rules says, so Prime, how does it feel that all the other office hours are fairly quiet, but yours is always full of questions? I don't mind. I'd like that to change at some point. It's just the other ones are quite focused. So moderation is like purely like, you know, Santa's naughty list, who's been bad or good, and stuff related to that. So like it's natural that that one has less. Rendering, like graphics, at Ginza's office hours, that's usually more technical questions, because the rendering questions get quite technical and shaders are very technical. So like, that's fine. Chroma does theirs like sporadically as well, so that's why there's not many questions. But mine is like, you know, always. We're always here. We're always happy to answer whatever. Whatever's going on. So yeah, it's fine. Maybe one day it'll be less busy. Cinetopia says, currently not able to remove contacts that haven't migrated. Are there plans to allow that? I think there are. I get confused because there were a couple of issues as we stood up our infrastructure in that mind. We had like a fixing job that was going to fix contacts. I need to double check on the status of that. Ultimately, yes, though. Luna asks, are there any updates on when we can expect the wiki to be available? No. I was about to say before the end of the year, but like, we're not having, like, I'm not having a good month for like just random work adding in that jumps around the priorities. So if I said before the end of the year, I'd step outside on my next dog walk and like a truck would hit me or something. So I'm not going to give you a time, but as soon as we can get it done, we'll get it done. All right, moving forwards to Tiki's question. How can I change the size and position of my hand colliders? Changing the grab area collider doesn't do anything. I'd have to look into how those are generated again, because I have forgotten. I will open up the code base, and if I have time, I'll take a look. Otherwise, I'll DM you the answer once I'm done. I closed it, but I don't remember why I closed it, because I had it open earlier. My computer didn't restart. I don't know. Shadow says that they forgot that you joined the stage and they heard a hello and it scared the crap out. Oh, yeah. We had a requirement ages ago on a Gary's Mod server that I helped run that if you wanted to be on the staff, you had to have a microphone and you had to prove that you had a microphone. You didn't have to speak because we didn't want to like force people to speak. We had to like prove that people could speak should there be a need to. Or at least that's what our policy was. We had a great person that just was mostly mute. And I said, sorry, like, you know, it's our policy, you've got to have a microphone, just in case. And so the single word they ever said to me was, hello! And that was it. We gave them admin, and they were a great admin on our Gary's Mod server. That was like 10, 15 years ago at this point, though. Last prime time, let me see this again. Tiki is asking, last prime time I left on the issue of my performance with more than one session being open, or should be expected, can do... down 25% with only 10 more people session. Would a bug report be in order? Absolutely a bug report would be in order. Make sure that you follow the format that is there and just provide as much detail as possible. Remember that the worst thing that can happen with a bug report is that we close it. And when we close it, we're not like, close it, oh, you're a bad person, or close it, naughty, naughty. We're like, close it, this isn't suitable for these reasons, etc. Like, we still appreciate it even if we do close it. It also allows it to sort of close in your brain. It's like, oh, okay, that's not a problem. So yeah, always fill them in. Do your very best to make sure that they are as, you know, understandable as possible. But if there are slip-ups, that's fine. We'll just close them and talk about them. Slinker asks, one, will there be an open source protoflux binding generator just slightly waiting, or is it planned? Let's make sure we have a GitHub issue on that one. I'm not entirely sure that we do. I seem to remember that we might. I haven't found it or looked at it recently, though. So let's make sure we have a GitHub issue on that one. We can go ahead and discuss that over there. I'm aware that that's an issue that is preventing... plugins and mods to some expect aspects from making their own Protoflux nodes. So it's important that we get that one sorted. Sorry, I lost in like five Discords by accidentally clicking Discords. Rusia asks, what are your thoughts on mods that focus on bug fixes and not enhancements? If mods wants to, if mod developers want to focus on trying to help the community by providing mods that correct what is confirmed to be a bug on GitHub, how would that be interpreted? I'm okay if you're doing that on one side, but on the other side, like I feel distraught that you're doing that, because it's like that means that in some aspects we're not doing our job, right? If people have to rely on a multitude of mods just to make the application work, that's like distressing to me. So provided it's logged on the GitHub as a bug and that, you know, we know that we can fix it when we're able to, yeah, I got no problem with it. Do also keep in mind with that, though, that like once we fix the bug that's reported, that mod won't be needed, and that might be a random day. So if you wake up one day and your mod suddenly isn't needed, please don't be disheartened. It's just that we finally got around to fixing it. Additionally, one of the other problems I see when we have mods that fix bugs is people fix the bugs, and then they go back to the bug report, and they're like, hey, just so you're aware, there's a mod here. That's fine. Sometimes it's like, just so you're aware, there's a mod here, and here's exactly how I fix the bug, and this is like what you should do literally in your code base. And that, while can appear helpful, sometimes isn't, because there is a sort of translation layer that goes through when you go from non-compiled to compiled when it comes to Firix Engine, etc. So stuff sometimes looks a little differently. We have to take in mind a lot more things as well when it's not a mod. So maybe the mod fixes all but one case of that bug, and you weren't actually aware that there was more another case of that bug occurring, but we were, because we had access to the source, and we were like, all right, we fixed it in location one, location two, but location three, the mod left off, so it's not exact, right? So we still have to do that research. And then occasionally it might be a performance problem or an architecture problem where we can't implement it exactly as the mod says. So provided you're not like coming back to the GitHub issue and going like, haha, I fixed it, here's exactly what you need to do, absolutely fine. The information ranges from incredibly helpful, because there's some mods where it's just like, oh, that's where I can go fix that stuff, or it's that easy to fix that stuff. A good example being like a long, long time ago when RT fixed the alignment of some of the fields on inspectors. I'm like, that's all it took? All right, I'll go do that. Keep it up and do it, but do know that every single one that you publish makes a kitten die inside my brain, because I'm just like, damn it. We should have fixed that. Damn it. Tiki, wait, that means grab mod would not be fixed someday. Okay, if a mod exists to fix an issue, but there is no GitHub issue, then it's the same as the saying, if a tree falls in the wood and no one's around, doesn't make a sound. If we don't know about it, we can't fix it. So if you have a mod that fixes an issue, make sure that there is a GitHub issue linked to it. If you want to be a proactive mod creator, maybe add a link to the GitHub issue that your mod fixes in that README. And that way people downloading the mod can see in the README what this fixes on our side, and then once that issue is closed and it's linked in the README, you can be like, cool. Also, don't underestimate the power of archiving a GitHub repository. So once we fixed an issue, for example, don't delete the mod, just archive it, right? At the very worst, that archived repository then becomes a sort of GitHub portfolio piece for yourself. You know, it shows like, hey, I did C# programming at one point. So I don't know, 20 years down the line or whatever, if you need to apply for a job that really needs Harmony patching for some reason, you've got examples of you doing it. So don't delete it when it's done. Just archive it or whatever. For those who are unaware, archiving a project on GitHub means that you can't push to it or change it in any way, but all of the history is preserved. You can still see the effort and the work that went into it. Lots of my repositories are archived right now because, hey, Mixer died. And like there's like APIs and clients and SDKs that just won't connect because there's no one to talk to. You know, there's no line to get to Mixer. It doesn't exist. Funny story on that one. Months, almost like years after Mixer died, I was still at Microsoft at that time, and I was on the mailing list of people who would periodically email me and be like, hey, a bit of Mixer is still alive, can we kill it? It was like hilarious. It was like, we found another server running some Mixer stuff, please help us kill it. And it's just like, oh, okay. I think it was like the search service or something was running. It's like it's throwing errors. It's like, of course it's throwing errors. It can't search for anything. There's no primary data store. It can't index from them, etc. Stuff like that. Shadow says, are there any plans for anything related to cloud variables? The amount of commands that you have to send to the Resonite bot right now is getting unwieldy. Right? It's good because we can just sort of hammer more in and you can get more functionality. So we're probably going to keep doing it. But it would be great if like most of the stuff that is sent to the Resonite bot right now, we could make UI or panels or settings widgets for, right? A good example here, I don't want to talk about settings, etc., but is like if you go over to the settings panel of, for example, Discord, there is just so much there that you can change. Can you imagine if for Discord you had to like message Discord bot and did that? So it's not ideal. So we want anything that's like in that Resonite bot to maybe have UI, maybe have some sort of smoother experience to doing that. One of those is cloud variables, where it's just like maybe there'll be a UI at some point that makes it easier to create them. And you know, it would utilize basically the same APIs under the hood that those commands run, but it would be driven by some UI or something at some point. I think they'll be a lot more understandable when they're not commands. I also think I need to open a bug report on it, but I think there's like one or two bugs that are preventing me from using cloud variables in ways that I like, which are mostly memes. But I'd have to look at that because it's been a while since I've looked at those. I remember when I got like completely confused writing the cloud variable wiki article. I'm just like, there's too much stuff here. They are incredibly powerful, but because they're all driven by those commands, they're kind of confusing sometimes. That's all the questions I see for the moment. If you have any additional questions, please do let me know. Lex asks, what decision-making goes into completely reworking your Resonite system versus fixing parts of the current system? It's a little bit difficult to figure that one out. I know that like settings, you know, it's under rework. Frix is working on it. But occasionally we would add a new setting, etc. You need to read our How We Prioritize Features to sort of understand that one. That is the document that we put out. I think was it last week? It was last week. I was just talking to Cromer about this. So I was like, my brain hasn't decided that it's a new week and we're on Tuesday. So it's a bit of a problem. So I'm trying to like convince my brain, hey, it's a new week. Because I, for some reason, still think it's Thursday, Friday, last week. It's basically that, though. Like, isn't it, like, let's do a worked example. Let's say, because we don't have a setting, someone is having a really bad experience, or there's like a security issue because we don't have this setting. We'd probably add that setting to the existing setting system. But if the issue was like small or didn't affect that many users, it would need to wait for the new setting system. And that's why we had lots of confusion there. But do take a look at the how we prioritize stuff to understand that just a little bit more. We're going to go ahead and expand and edit that content as we sort of grow and as we, you know, have more bandwidth. It's an interesting conversation when we sort of use the word bandwidth. What we mean by bandwidth is like how much more can we take, right? So how much more work can Prime get, can Frux get, can anyone on the team get before they just fall over? And that has a fixed cap right now because of our team size. But once we grow, we'll have more people, which means we can do more work at once, etc. AO asks, how much yellow fur has to be plucked out of the code before updates can be pushed? Occasionally, like I'll take the concept of yellow fur and just say like cruft, right? Because sometimes there is cruft. When you're doing programming, I'm sure if you're, well, everyone does this, but like even when you're newer to programming, you'll do this even more, where you just add like console.log or console.writeline everywhere. You're just like, I have no idea what's going on. Let me just add console.whatever everywhere I can to figure out what's going on. That stuff still happens. I've been programming for like, you know, almost 2 decades now. That still happens. And so when I say removing the cruft, you're like, all right, now it works. I can remove this from it. I can remove all this junk from it. And so then you spend like 5-10 minutes just like removing random junk that you added just because you were distraught. You were like, I don't know how this works. So there is a lot of that. You also see that in commits a lot. It's like, you know, you think the code's perfect and then you push a commit and it's like, error, missing semicolon. It's just like, oh, okay. So the answer there, I guess, would be a little bit. Ozzy says, with the recent GitHub issue of Protoflux running under disabled slots, how do you think the myth that it was by design or intended got around? With the way that Protoflux was created and the way that we released, there is like a little bit of confusion. Like we didn't have good bug tracking. We didn't have good decision-making stuff stood up. Like we're still standing up a lot of that. So I don't think any of those myths are true or helpful. It's an issue. We want to look at it, and we'll look at it when we can. I don't like it when those sort of weird myths come up. Like I heard the other day that we had purposely like made full body worse so that people couldn't use full body for adult activities in private. And it's like, who comes up with this stuff? To illustrate the problem with that sort of rumor mill, a long, long time ago, I banned ladders on a Minecraft server for like 15 minutes because people would like walk around in chat and they'd be like, is XYZ block banned? And I'm just like, we have an official list of banned blocks over here. like, it's, you know, it was on the page for the Minecraft server, right? So, like, if you've got a myth, ask about it and we can confirm it. But once we've confirmed it, that myth should die. I see Fruxx is typing, so maybe they'll have a statement on the Protofluxy stuff. Exus says, why does office hours have to take place while I'm working? There are 24 hours in the day, and this lasts for half an hour. I have to pick somewhere, and I'm not able to survey the entire population of Resonite to figure out when everyone's at work, unfortunately. That's exactly why it's happening. I have considered doing additional segments, but with other groups within the team or other people making office hours later on in the week, there isn't enough like room for more office hours content. So maybe attend one of those sessions if you'd like. Shannon has a suggestion for the wiki. Please restructure how the wiki explains cloud variables. Yeah, probably will do that. You're also welcome to do it yourself once it's out. Electronus is not able to listen at the moment. My understanding was Rafe was kind of a server web guy. It appears to be no longer part of the team. Who's handling servers and pages? The combination of Fruxx, Geens, and myself are handling infrastructure now. I have half a decade of experience running Linux servers for racing events around the world. Geens has, I don't know where his experience is sourced from, but it's not like as pivotal, like, oh, I have half a decade running racing events around the world, that's really impactful, but Geens does also know Linux. Fruxx is less confident on Linux, but we're teaching him as we go. We're also making sure that anything we don't know, we document now. It's very important. I do it with my life and all my personal projects, but it's basically like, I had to expend energy to figure out this thing, I will write down my result. So a good example here is I have a page in my digital notebook called Things You Keep Forgetting, and it links to a bunch of other pages where I've made notes on things I keep forgetting. One of them is how to run a very basic web server. So if I'm working on a website and I want to run a very big, like a very basic web server so that the, you know, the file links work correctly, that's one of the pages on stuff I keep forgetting. I'm going to read, for the benefit of the recording, I'm going to read Fruxx's response to the GitHub Protoflux thingy. Fruxx says, there's one thing I feel people don't do enough, which is ask for sources. Do you want some ketchup? Do you want some, you know, maybe some mayonnaise? Sources, not sources. If you hear something, ask, how do you know that? Where did the information come from? Is there a place where someone on the team said that? And then they say, if you can't get to the primary source of some information, take it with a grain of salt. It's not just for us and Resonite. It's good for critical thinking. Always look for primary sources. There's lots of misinformation on the internet about everything. Couldn't agree more. Back when I was in school, I remember this because it was early as it's hard to always align my school system to everyone else's school system, but like, I'm gonna say year two. So you're like, year two is the second year of education after like preschool. We were talking about primary and secondary sources. And I remember learning like bibliographies and how we couldn't use Wikipedia because it didn't cite its sources, even though it did. Like, everyone's done that, right? It is so important in the technical world. I mean, it's important everywhere, but it's so important in the technical world, particularly if you're a trusted member within the community. So like Ozzy, just picking on you because you're there, you're awesome. You're a moderator and you're very good at being a moderator, but that also gives you sort of a trusted place within the community, which means you have more of a sort of pressure to make sure that anything you say is correct. And Ozzy, you do a great job doing that, so don't worry about it. But you know, that's an example. It's like, you know, I am the Protoflux tutor. Maybe we have a YouTube channel that picks up and it's like, I am the Protoflux tutor. And if they don't check their sources are primary, then I don't think they should have that title. Like, constantly be checking it, constantly be updating it as well. It's like, you know, I wish like academic papers were more like approachable from people not in academia, because they're usually written in like really high level technical language. But like, just seeing how like every single time they make a statement that they can't back up in their actual paper, they'll link to another paper or another thing that like does it. And it gets ridiculous. It's like, there's an experiment I'm working on currently where we're looking at skin conductivity. It's called the galvanic skin response. And they reference like four or five papers that talk about galvanic skin response, because they need to build the foundation of knowledge that galvanic skin response is good, a good measurement to have in that experiment. Rhino says, favorite sauce. I really like Big Mac sauce or burger sauce. Like, I could put burger sauce on everything. As far as I'm aware, like, burger sauce is basically like ketchup and mayo mixed together with some spices. But like, I could put burger sauce on anything. Like, there have been times where I've squirted burger sauce into mac and cheese and it's just like added an edge. Which reminds me, if you're making mac and cheese, add some spices, guys. Just a little bit of spice. And it doesn't have to be like spice, what I'm talking about, like hot peppers or anything. But like, you know, add some salt, add some pepper, maybe add some herbs. just like, you'll make your mac and cheese better. You can take like a, you know, a box craft mac and cheese, add some spices. It's like gourmet. Gonna read a follow-up statement from Fruks about this thing, because there's more good information in it. Do it of everything. Question why you know things and why you know them. It's good to do things overall to clear up your knowledge. I try to do this whenever I can and find some things I believed I didn't have a good reason to. It's a good thing too, because whenever you do that, your knowledge becomes better when you do it. And if you know something, you can find good information and confirm that. It helps to reinforce knowledge too. Yes. I wish when I was taught science at school, I wish I was more emphasized that the purpose of science was to prove undeniably that something was true. Right, that's the topic. And most of the time, science actually can't do that. So what they do is when they publish a paper, they say, our results seem to suggest. You'll hear that word, like seem to suggest. So it's like, our results seem to suggest that humans need water. Absolutely. Good, that's easy to prove. Our results seem to suggest that the world is ending. Okay, that's more difficult to prove. Someone here, Stompy DPD, has said chopped onion in mac and cheese. Absolutely. If you like caramelize those onions a bit, chop them in the mac and cheese. Absolutely. Another thing you can do for mac and cheese that's really easy is if you make it, you can then put breadcrumbs on top and then put it in the oven for a little bit. Those breadcrumbs brown, and then you get like a crunchy, cheesy top layer on the mac and cheese. I don't remember the exact context. I hope someone knows it. But there was a science paper that was published purely to make it like problematic that the science community was like that. They were doing a paper on how parachutes reduced the chances of injury when jumping out of a plane, but they made a critical error deliberately in their paper, which was the plane was not in flight. So people were jumping out of a plane stationary on the runway wearing a parachute and not wearing a parachute. And it's like, the results show there's no difference in wearing a parachute or not wearing a parachute. Everyone survived. But you had to read the details to be like, ah, they did this on purpose. The plane was flying at 0 feet. Rusio is talking about how now it's on GitHub, it's easier to disprove rumors. That's correct. Rusio also talked about how they had an assumption that it was being tracked elsewhere. Even if you have the assumption that it's being tracked elsewhere, if you can't see it, assume it's not being tracked. We do have an internal private issue tracker, which has lots of stuff on it, and there are some duplicates, and they do cross-linking. But just assume that assume we're silly. Do take that, like, assume that we're silly. Be polite about it, but assume that we're silly. Because let's be honest, at 4 a.m, if I'm typing C# code, I'm silly. Again, I'm going to read for the recording benefits. Fruks says, we notice that it goes the other way a lot of times too. People assume that something is intentional, so they don't make an issue about it, and then it never gets fixed because we don't know about it. If you make an issue, we can at least look at it and say, this is intentional, and close it. Which is a good thing, because now it's on record, and we can be like, nope, that's supposed to happen. But if no issue is made, nothing can really happen. The more issues we have, closed, open, stale, I don't care. The more issues we have on that GitHub, the better. There are some points in the actual code base where I say this, like in a comment, this was done because of this. I also explain the reason in the code base, but I put another line which is like, this was caused by this in the comment. And what that means is if like we hire a programmer tomorrow, like Rampa, welcome to the team, you're on the team, and you open up the code and you scroll through it and you're like, why the hell did Prime put like a humongous piece of cheese in the middle of this code? And then there's a comment from Prime that says, here's why I did it. Here's a link to the original issue. Rampa can then click that link, go to the original issue. And even though it's closed, and maybe it was closed a year ago, there's the exact description of why it was closed, all the log files, everything's there. And they can be like, that makes sense. Good job, Prime. Rampa, you're now fired from the team. You lasted about a minute in this hypothetical scenario. Congrats. Although Rampa does actually have a question here. Any official statement coming on the topic of Wraith leaving? There's some confusion in the discussion about it. I'm not sure if we have an official statement about that I can provide here, so I won't provide a statement. But yes, it is true that they have left. Glitch's Sona is a cat, right? I don't want to like make assumption. I mean, it looks like a cat. Is it a cat? I'm waiting for Fruks to type, because, you know, he should know, you know, what the species of Glitch's Sona is. I'm certain it's a cat, but like I keep doubting myself, and I never like, there was one point where I had a conversation with someone, I was like, oh, that's an awesome Sona, it's a insert species here, and they're like, no, it's actually an insert species here, and I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I'd rather like ask and know. Luna says, write self-document code, then document that code. Exactly. I really hate people who say like, but comments can get out of date. It's like, okay, test your comments then. It's like, what do you mean? It's like, when you edit the code, read the comment and see if it still makes sense. There's this sort of alternative way of writing tests as well. I think it's called like Gherkin or something. Gherkin BDD. So Gherkin is a type of testing that's called behavior-driven development. And you sort of you make a specification that is really difficult to read in Discord dark mode. I apologize. But you basically, you're like, here is an exact scenario. Here is what happens, and here are my expectations. And then in code, you sort of back that specification up with some code, and that way you kind of prove that that business case has been met. I will link the Gherkin website. I don't know enough about it. Actually, this is the Cucumber website. Is there like a like specific Gherkin website? I don't know. I'll just link the Cucumber website. Like, there's stuff here. Like, there you go. We don't use it at Resonate. I don't think we would for a while as well. It's pompous is the wrong word, but like, it's a little bit like further away from just like making the code work. That means that like I'm a little bit hesitant on exploring using it. But the reason it came up is because like when you write tests like that, the tests then actually become documentation because like you annotate the code of like, this is the part of the scenario that happens now, etc. It's I know a lot more about it than I'm trying to explain here because I'm bad at explaining it, but yeah, I'll take a look at it. Some people said, actually, here we go. Corey says, I don't know, says, one tip I heard was don't add comments to explain how your code works. Adds a comment to explain why it does that. Yep. Why it does that is very important. Frix also says, making mistakes is a natural part of being human. In a lot of ways, it's beneficial too, because you can learn from them well, which helps improve your knowledge on why things are there. And you better understand why they are not done the other way rather than just being told. It helps you build your intuition about things. Yes, practice saying, I don't know, and practice learning. Most people like stop actively learning when they finish school, depending on their job role, of course, but like just always be learning. If you don't know something, figure it out. Like yesterday, I saw a clip on TikTok or something of some thieves stealing catalytic converters. And I'd forgotten what a catalytic converter did, so I spent half an hour reading the Wikipedia article about catalytic converters. I have since forgotten what I read, but the point was there. I was like, I don't know that. I'll read it again. Yeah, I thought Nibble was half a byte. Yeah, half a byte. Carl Seuss here says, I highly recommend learning to take the L to say I was wrong. Yeah, that's really good as well. Like sometimes when you do something wrong, and then you apologize to someone, like the apology is like 50% of the way, but like if you do I'm sorry I was wrong, that's a really good apology, because you're like, not only are you sorry, you're also admitting fault. And admitting fault sounds like sort of, you know, like criminal or legal. It doesn't have to be that. It's like, I am sorry I forgot to put the dishwasher on. I was wrong in assuming that you had done it. No one's mad at anyone. The dishwasher just wasn't put on. I don't see any questions coming up at this point. We're sort of going into philosophy, etc. But that's cool. Carl Sue, if you have a question, you are the last person that's allowed to ask a question, and then we'll leave off from there. All right, there are no more questions. We'll go ahead and leave off there. I think I'm a bit tardy. That means late, by the way. Sorry, I'm using fancy words. On getting the office hours up on my page, I'll sort that out. I've also noticed that Git has been providing audio files of the moderation office hours. I'm going to go ahead and upload those. We still haven't really decided where they go to long-term, but I might as well. Getting those up also allows me to test something, because I'm not sure how my transcription pipeline handles multiple speakers, because it's usually just me speaking. I don't know how it handles multiple speakers, so we'll take a look. If you have any additional questions, feel free to ping me. Not all team members are okay with that. I am, just because I like being friendly that way. DM me, or I'll make a GitHub issue. Do remember that if you ask about a bug or you ask about a feature and there isn't a GitHub issue, I probably won't talk to you about it. I need the GitHub issue. Give me the GitHub. I will speak to you guys later.